This podcast is brought to you by the Clare and Gilbert Valleys Council. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Clare Valley Podcast, providing all the latest council news and events from the local council region. I'm your host, Annabelle Homer. Coming up on this episode, you'll meet Abby Tiller and Melissa Smith, the co-creators of Greater SA.
So we have left our jobs and we're
taking a leap of faith.
We have taken a leap of faith and we're willing to take that sacrifice. We know that starting a new business isn't easy and everybody must start somewhere.
These two creative ladies from Balaclava have developed a one-stop shop media platform for all of you to get access to stories from right across regional South Australia. Now you're probably thinking, hang on, but every newspaper, radio and TV station has their own web platforms. Why do we need another one? We'll find out from Mel and Abby later why their latest venture is a little bit different. Also, next year marks 40 years of Clare Gourmet, and it's said to be bigger and better than before, with an added twist. All thanks to an injection of council funds. But first, let's get the latest from council headquarters. We're joined by CEO Dr. Helen McDonald. It was a lengthy meeting with much discussion about the budget review. Council is required to undertake three budget reviews during the financial year. The first one was discussed at this month's meeting. So why is there a need to have a budget review in the first place? Dr. Helen McDonald.
So a budget is your best estimate plan about what's going to happen through the year, what the cost is going to be. And as we all know, there's been significant inflation rises in costs over the last 12 months. The budget that we developed at the beginning of this calendar year, it's difficult for it to be accurate. So that's one of the things is where there's significant changes in the cost of capital projects. It's important that we bring that to council's attention and enable them to make a decision whether or not they want all of those projects to continue on, even where there's a significant increase to the cost to councils. And sometimes also there are unexpected things that happen which will require capital expenditure. And so that also needs to be brought to the attention of council, and council needs to make that decision about whether or not those things are done and included in the budget.
Is this unprecedented, what you're seeing?
Oh, absolutely. This is the first budget review which has been included changes like across the board for capital projects because of increased costs since we have done the budget. It's almost monthly we're getting compounding increases in costs. So, you know, you think you've nailed it in October and then suddenly you find yourself talking to a contractor in November and costs has changed. The things that we all know, you know, fuel costs, labour costs, costs of other inputs, they're the big ones.
And there's enough money in the kitty, in the council's kitty, to allow for those adjustments?
Oh, yeah. I mean, capital projects are basically projects that are long life. If you don't have cash at hand, then you would be borrowing for those because you are expecting beneficiary of those projects to be future generations so they can be paid for in future years. Government finances are not the same as business finances. Things don't get written off through depreciation. Some things can be written off, but a lot of infrastructure, it's never written off. They're depreciated over a period of time and then can be reappreciated. And we're probably getting into too much detail here, but anyway. So yeah, if we don't have cash at hand, then it's about using borrowings. The important thing is to understand, do you have income that can cover those borrowings? But you not only have to balance what you're looking at in here and now, but those other significant capital projects that are coming in the pipeline and how that will impact your borrowings and your capacity to pay for them. So, for example, council has some significant stormwater infrastructure, particularly for Clare, that it has been under consideration for quite some time, but where we're looking at tens of millions of dollars, we have to be mindful that that's coming down the pipeline. So that's the purpose of having your long-term financial plan, where you can have those projects in the pipeline and you can make sure that you have the capacity to pay for them in the future.
At this stage, council has made no decision about the review. Administration will provide an updated report to the councillors at the December meeting.
There is a request by a private landholder to rezone land from rural to rural neighbourhood to allow for future subdivisions and residential development. Now, the land is 11.6 hectares fronting onto Horrocks Highway and onto the side of Eaton Road. It's located 3 km from Clare Main Street and directly north of the caravan park. Now, the land is historically known to be used as cropping and grazing purposes, but it's not considered to be highly productive. So with that information on hand, what did council decide in regards to this rezoning? And does council have much of a say?
No, council doesn't really have much of a say. So in light of the Stanley Flat code amendment, so these are private code amendments, they're not driven by council or the state government, they're driven by property owners, which under the new planning code is perfectly legitimate thing that can happen. Generally, when there's a private code amendment, they don't have to have it, but they like to have the support of council before it goes to the planning commission for endorsement. If they didn't have it, there'd probably be some proviso that they need to go and speak with council and ensure that the proposal is supported by council. Quite interesting when really the minister's made it pretty clear, doesn't really care what council thinks about these things. The recommendation that was put to councils was a recommendation from myself, from administration, which was to note it and allow it to proceed. It was very purposely not making any comment about whether the size of the allotments was good, bad or indifferent. I had advised elected members that their input to the code amendment can happen during the consultation period, and so they could at that point say no, they didn't agree with the lot size, or if it goes ahead they wanted to see A, B, C and D. They would have time to provide considered input into the proposed code amendment.
During that consultation period.
Yeah, exactly. The minister will provide his advice to the planning commission, but it's the planning commission that actually provides a decision. And if it does proceed, because there's a good chance that the minister say, well, no, if he does what he did with Stanley Flat, he'll say, no, I won't approve that, but I'll approve something with blocks of 1,200 to 3,000 square metres. And at that point, then council will provide its advice. If the development is contrary to its strategic plan, I would expect that councillors will have very strong views about what is proposed.
From November 13th, the upstairs space in the Valleys, originally used by the Clare Sports Club, will be vacant. What's council doing with this space?
Well, it's actually vacant now. So council is just going out to market to see if there's any interest in any businesses leasing that property, not necessarily to use it the same way it's been historically used as a function centre. If anybody wants offices, I tell you it's got the best view in all of Clare, especially now that the Oval is looking absolutely magnificent. We've got that magnificent new building.
And can you tell me how much it is to lease that space?
Oh, we don't know. That's what we're going to market for, is to gauge the level of interest. And because the Clare Sports Club didn't pay for it, like many community organisations that use council buildings, they don't pay, they get peppercorn leases.
So you're open to another peppercorn lease?
Council is open to anything that would come. So basically we're testing the market and testing for interest. If there's a proposal from a community group, then yeah.
A total of 7 applications were received by the closing date of Thursday. This is for the community asset grant. Funding requested range from $2,800 to $10,000. There was one application which was deemed ineligible because it wasn't accurately reported. Overall, a pretty good response to this round, and I understand there's some leftover funds.
That's right. Community asset grants sort of has its ups and downs, so it can be incredibly popular 1 year and then you get years where there's less applications, and it's really got to do with the individual organisations and because they've got to have matching funds. So this year is one of the years where it's got less applications, so there's funds left over, and council decided that it would put that money up for community groups to apply for if they've got infrastructure programs, initiatives that they want to implement. That will be something that we'll probably do in the next calendar year.
$14,000 is available in the next round. Congratulations to all the current recipients. Richardson Park to improve the car park. Stockport Community Association to upgrade the playground toilets. The Watervale Community Association for new furniture for the Vale. Manura Centenary Park to cement the floor for a new sports change room and wellness centre. Mintero Progress Association to improve the garden space. And the Riverton Community Management Committee to purchase a digital sign on the main street to promote local events. Rhynie Improvement Scheme has recently gone into hiatus, with the peak body funds now being administered and managed through the Riverton Community Management Committee. So what happened to the Rhynie Improvement Scheme?
My understanding is basically lack of interest from the community to take on responsibility, I suppose, and participate in that particular peak body, rather than trying to flog a dead horse, as it were, because they're so close to Riverton that those people that are interested have joined forces with Riverton for the time being. My understanding is they'll do that for some time and then come back to the Rhynie community to see if there's interest in reigniting the Rhynie Improvement Scheme.
Helen, thank you very much again for your time with an update on the latest happenings at Council. I look forward to having another chat with you in a month's time.
No, it's not a month, because we've only got 3 weeks between now and our next Council, because the happy holidays mean that we have to bring our Council meeting forward.
Oh, so, gee, I better get organised then, shall I?
Yep. No, our little podcast listeners are going to have to do a lot of driving and listening. They're coming thick and fast.
Clare Valley Podcast.
Clare Valley Podcast.
You're listening.
Clare Valley Podcast.
Clare Valley Podcast.
In last month's podcast, Dr. Helen McDonald referred to the Hallmark funding to assist with the 40th anniversary celebrations of Gourmet Week. The Clare Valley Wine and Grape Association will receive $20,000 to assist in making the celebrations bigger and better than ever before. It's the first time an organisation from this council region has received this funding, as the applicant has to achieve certain economic impacts, including over 1,000 event attendees, over 800 bed nights, and a substantial national or international profile. Belinda Heinrich is the association's marketing and events coordinator, who is thrilled with the council support.
It's a huge deal. We are absolutely thrilled that the local council has decided to support us with the Hallmark funding, which, to my knowledge, has never been given to an event before. I don't know whether that's because nobody's applied for it. There are some pretty large hurdles you have to get over and requirements you have to meet in terms of visitor nights and numbers to the region and dollars spent in the region to qualify to apply for the Hallmark funding. And Gourmet meets all of those requirements. So we put together and spent a long time putting together an application to council. A lot of research and data that went into it from past Gourmet events to qualify all of that information that council required, and a lot of supporting documentation from other partners that were keen to see this funding get up to help support the event in its 40th year. I think it shows that the council is really aware of how important it is to drive visitation to our region. And by supporting us with this additional funding that wasn't part of their budget, and I appreciate it was a huge decision for the councillors to make, because it had to go to a council meeting. They had to decide on it, and I understand it was a unanimous yes to support this additional funding. And it just shows that they are aware of how important it is to drive that economic growth to our region by visitation, and Gourmet does that.
So 40 years, $20,000, what can you do with that money?
That money has excitingly enabled us to build our website capabilities and increase our PR and advertising spend. And in line with that, we have decided to open up the entire event to the entire Clare and Gilbert Valleys Council region. So anybody that has a business in the region can now host an event. So it's not limited to our members at the Clare Valley Wine and Grape Association. So we're really excited to see the entire region come to life and hold numerous events over those 10 days of the 40th celebration of Gourmet.
And it can be any type of event, or is it specifically has to do with food and wine?
No, it can be anything. Type of event. I mean, it could be floral arranging, CWA scone making, art classes, any type of event, you know, in line with your business or a collaboration between different businesses. We're open to any sort of unique, interesting, fun, exciting idea. We have a handbook that we've put together that will be going out on our channels in the next week or so, which outlines the sort of ethos of Gourmet and we'll give people the guidelines on how to prepare their events and also an event application portal for all of those events to be submitted to, which will come back to us and we will look at them all, talk to people about how they can either improve, build on, or, you know, offer some sort of
feedback,
I guess.
So you're not going to reject anyone as such. It's just more of a guidance and to make sure that they
absolutely
put on
and
a
also
good
to make
show.
Sure events aren't doubling up at the same time, because we don't want five pizza making classes on the Tuesday night, for example. But I just really want the entire community behind gourmet. You know, we all love it. Everybody in Clare loves gourmet and the food and wine aspect of it. But I really think, you know, there's a lot of untapped creatives already here, and I just want to bring the community together and really have an incredible festival vibe for the 40th celebration. Quickly.
And it doesn't cost any businesses anything?
No, if you are part of the Clare and Gilbert Valleys Council or a member of our association, it is free. If you're a not-for-profit or a community group, it's free. And all other applications, i.e. Goyder Council, are $125 per event.
And is there a maximum number of events that you're after? Is there a cutoff?
No, there's no cutoff. So you can put forward as many events as you like, but you do need to do an event application for every single event for your organisation.
From what I've heard, visitor numbers are down if you compare to the last couple of years where they were significantly higher, but they're still probably higher than they were pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. Is that a concern? Is that also something that's on your mind?
It absolutely is. My biggest concern is accommodation, and I think that it's a concern for lots of businesses in Clare at the moment, and I think possibly part of the downturn in visitation is because of the lack of accommodation, so it's something that does need to be addressed in the future.
Okay, and how are you going to address that during Clare Gourmet Week?
It's called collaboration, and at the moment I am in early conversations with a couple of different places to put up glamping tent areas, so that's exciting. Ooh. A couple of community groups hopefully coming on board with that.
Well, Belle, thank you so much for the update, and for anybody who's interested in putting in an event as part of the 40th anniversary of Clare Gourmet, it looks like it's going to be one with a difference, so it'll be exciting to see who puts their hand up and puts their businesses forward.
We can't wait, and we're really grateful to the funding from the council.
That's Belinda Heinrich. She's the marketing and events coordinator for the Clare Valley Wine and Grape Association. So if you're looking to put on an event, all the details have been advertised in the Plains Producer. It'll also be on the association's social media pages and its website, and the details will also be in my show notes. Applications need to be received by January 16th. The program launch will be March 19th. So people of the Clare and Gilbert Valleys region, put your best foot forward and be part of the 40th anniversary gourmet celebrations. Okay, speaking of businesses, let's talk about one that has recently been launched. Have you seen all the social media about Greater SA? It's a modern media platform that's been created by two local Balaclava lasses to keep regional people connected to local news and regional stories that matter. With many regional local papers either closing or merging to make bigger regional publications, those local stories are harder to come by. But that's where Greater SA steps in. Abby Tiller and Melissa Smith are the co-creators of Greater SA, super passionate about regional content, regional communities, and covering those stories that don't see the light of day on mainstream media. It's only been 3 months since it was launched, so let's meet these ladies and find out more about Greater SA. Well, firstly, I just wanted to say thank you so much for being part of the Clare Valley podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, and we love the Clare Valley, and we are really happy. The Clare Valley certainly have supported us, and there's so much to do here. So what better way to start than with a podcast in the Clare Valley?
Let's find out a little bit about you girls, because I've been listening to your podcast for a couple of years now, called The 40s Project.
Yes.
You're both from the Balaclava area. A little bit of background about you both, please. Abby, start with you.
Oh, I am a country person through and through. I grew up at Lochiel on a family farm, went to school at Balaclava, studied in Adelaide for a short time, about a year, but Adelaide definitely not for me. I'd rather, you know, poke myself in the eye with a fork. So I moved back to Balaclava. I had done a little bit of work in the early days at the Northern Argus here in Clare, and then I got a cadetship in journalism at the Plains Producer, where I worked until I had my children, and then something happened to my brain. So I did do a little bit of journalism work, an opinion column for the Sunday Mail and the Stock Journal, and then farm life, kids and all of that stuff fried my brain until, you know, the last few years when I've started to find my creative streak again.
And you certainly have. Mel, what about you?
I grew up in the country as well. I was born in the city, grew up in the country, formative years in the country, moved to the city, lived in the city for 10 years. Can't say I hate the city. Re-met my husband, who is a farmer, which drew me back to Balaclava, which I went to high school at Balaclava as well. I've got a background in disability work. I used to be a nurse, so very community services minded, but always had a bit of a creative streak and started a little blog. Took a couple of years off of work, had three children, helped my husband a little bit more on the farm with the bookwork and stuff like that. I'm not the tractor driver. I just do the bookwork. And started a blog because I got bored. Way too many committees to fill my time. And, yeah, I suppose that's where that little writing streak came out and really enjoyed it.
So how did you guys meet then?
Well, we'd always known each other because we're Ballet girls.
Have a circle, and sometimes it's a larger circle, and then, you know, the circle sort of got smaller.
It did, and it was over COVID. Our local football club decided not to run that year, and so our boys joined a different football club, and we found ourselves sitting in a car watching our boys play football because we couldn't do anything. It was actually quite nice. We could just sit in the car and watch the boys. And I don't know, I guess a friendship formed and we had a lot in common. We made each other laugh. And then one day Abby said, we should do a podcast. And I went, oh, yeah, sure. Next phone call. I'm in Adelaide. I'm buying a microphone. Okay. We call her the ideas girl.
Yeah.
And I'm the older one going, just let me think about it for a little while.
And we call our microphone Phallicville.
We do.
You're listening to the 40s Project podcast with no cheesy quotes, no annoying buzzwords or catchphrases. We're just a couple of...
So from that moment, when was the first episode released? Was it a week after you ignited that or you thought about it for a while?
It wasn't very long, no.
I think I'd just turned 40.
Yeah, you were coming 40 when this idea came.
And I found a lot of things changed in my world when I turned 40. What better thing to do than to share it and talk about it and be able to have these open conversations. So, yeah, it wasn't very long after, you know, Melissa thought I was joking about starting a podcast that we just started doing it.
To the embarrassment of our children. It's hilarious.
For us, it's more therapy than anything else. It's
a good
belly
fun.
Laugh. It's yep. fun. It yep. gets us talking about things that we get too busy to talk about in day-to-day life.
We would talk about in the car. It was the idea of taking those conversations that we were having in the car at footy and sharing it with other women because we knew that
we
that's
can't
what
fit,
other women are talking
can't
about
fit them
too.
All in the car at footy.
No, that's right.
And we did have a man one day. We were down at Virginia and just before we left the footy, he wound down the window and said, God, I haven't been watching much of the footy, but you girls are funny to listen to. So we're going to take
Western
that and run
world,
with it.
Why do we celebrate people that are good with balls? I don't get it.
We put them on a pretty high pedestal, don't we? Well, anyone that's good at any sport.
Yeah.
Like dumb, but God, he can jump.
Yeah. And we have these competitions where it's like
Yeah, you definitely have a podcast high. That's a laugh out loud podcast. I do enjoy listening to it. And I take my hat off to you because you've now broadened that because you are now embarking or have embarked for the last, 6 months? Is it six months?
No, not even.
Three. 3 months, you're now starting a media platform called Greater SA to try and share regional stories across the state online. Why have you decided to go down this track? You've got your own jobs. You've got a family. You were an SSO, Abby, and you worked with disability.
I was in disability sector, just recently.
And now you've started off this media platform. Mm-hmm. How do you do it all?
Well, we chucked our jobs in.
I actually went back to journalism about 12 months ago. Well, not specifically journalism at the start, but just being back in that industry and working back at the paper, I sort of went, yeah, this is where I'm supposed to be. And it was kind of a weird how I got there because I had been looking after a little boy for the previous few years through the school system and at home who has a terminal illness. So I sort of juggle him now, still looking after him at home sometimes. But yeah, got back into this creative zone and went, yeah, this is for me. Then I took up a job in the city as a journalist, which was great. You know, solidified that whole writing is for me and I love creativity, but I don't love the city. And just reminded me, because city people, like, you can be quite insular to the world around you, and just the pride I have in the country and the knowing of how these country communities work. Mm-hmm. And I went, you know what? We have got so much in the country to celebrate and so many stories.
I think because we're both quite community-minded, we grew up watching our parents be very involved in community, and that idea of if you want stuff done in the country,
yeah,
communities have to get together, and it changes what that community is, whereas you just don't get that in the city.
I guess it's no secret regional papers are on the decline, so that local aspect is slowly being lost. Is that the other reason why you've gone down this track, apart from the fact that, you know, you don't want to work in the city, but is that the reason?
Well, things are changing. Things are constantly changing, and we don't know what the future holds, but technology, the web, everything.
I think we know as consumers ourselves.
Yeah.
I read and all my news online.
Yeah, where we're getting our stuff
but
from.
But the papers are online. What different spin are you putting on it?
So I guess the big thing is that we are connecting all the regions, because with your local newspaper, which there'll always be a place as long as, you know, they can keep that up for the local newspaper, but, you know, we can advertise, we can tell our stories to the same people in our region. And having worked in regional newspapers, it can be like Groundhog Day, because the same stuff happens, the same events happen every year. It's like, oh, like just last week, oh, that lady's on the front of the paper. I've seen that story for the last 20 years. She's been doing that every year. But this is an opportunity that I really don't think's done before, of connecting other regional areas together, because we've also all got so much in common. Yeah. I find it fascinating. And I don't read as many of the human interest stories, and I know there's some, like, fascinating
people. Oh, it's an amazing story. The best stories are from the regions.
Yeah, and I also know that how great is it for someone at Balaclava to read about something that a group's doing on the Eyre Peninsula and going, hey, we could do that here, or how cool's that? Or next time we go through the Eyre Peninsula, I might stop in and visit that place. And you know, there's areas of SA that get missed out. Like, I forget that Mount Gambier is part of South Australia too. And then there's KI. Like, I feel like that's overseas because I don't know much about it apart from the, you know, the global tourism mecca. But, you know, they're community country people just like us, and we should know our neighbours.
There's a wealth of stories on your website already.
Mm.
And the journos are you and Mel.
Yep.
So what's the plan? Because you can't keep running
global domination. No, I'm joking. But no, there are a lot of balls in the air. Yeah, which has been and we've been on an interesting learning curve.
Yeah.
But definitely as we grow, obviously the business will grow too. And yeah.
And I'm very much one to go, I can do it. I can do it. I'll be fine.
Yes.
So the question I really want to know is, how are you going to make this financially viable for you guys? You obviously want to get paid for this eventually.
Yeah, we can't be volunteers forever.
No.
And we did work out that launching this, everybody's got to start somewhere. So we have left our jobs and we're
taking a leap of faith.
We have taken a leap of faith and we're willing to take that sacrifice. We know that starting a new business isn't easy and everybody must start somewhere. So we've just gone about writing, trying to get to every region in SA. It's been pretty events heavy early on because
There's a lot of stuff that goes on in the regions.
And most of them are volunteer run, stuff to showcase their region. And, you know, and it's been fascinating for me. All of a sudden I want to go everywhere because I'm like, well, Barossa's just not that far away and they're having this beautiful festival. And, you know, the Riverland's got this Rose Festival. And like last weekend, Goyder was having their garden festival. So
it's also overwhelming.
It is very overwhelming. Yes. There is a lot of stuff. But we have gone about writing these stories as they come in, helping to showcase them, letting people know what's on, plus trying to throw a few human interest stories in there. You know, this has really been to show people what we're about, what we want to do, and we think that we can create a wonderful tool for regional SA to share their stories, and it can even become like a great tool for people wanting to visit regional SA.
Mm-hmm.
And we really think that if we just get certain businesses to pay for an article or put a gig guide up of what they've got, because there is a lot of events, like I said, then we can continue to write about the small people and those community run events and the volunteers and the services as well.
We're onto something good. We see the value in it, and we just need, I suppose, that exposure. And we've had to put the runs on the board to get the articles out there and read, and for people to see what we can offer.
Having someone to do it with, of course, Melissa and I had sat in that car at football. We'd done the podcast together and we knew that we were a good fit to be able to work together, and we had the same kind of values. And so when she might be doubting things a little bit, I might be going, no, we'll be fine. This is going to be great. Think about a year's time, and vice versa. So it's just having that person to prop you up, you know.
And I'm impressed because, there are so many stories on there in 2 months.
Yeah,
and you've got from all over the state. It's not just in the mid-north.
We're really trying to
hit everywhere.
We bought a
big laminated map that's sitting on the wall, and we try and make sure we put little pins in it as to which regions we're hitting. Actually, there's a little spot right over near Lake Everard on the Eyre Peninsula that we've got to find something over there.
That's fantastic. It's like, we're going to go here this week.
Yeah.
Close their eyes, point at the map. What's on the cards over the next month?
Christmas markets.
We do
Christmas
find
pageants. Christmas.
Oh yeah.
We want to develop some guides, and you know, that covers the whole state. So
and markets. I know that if I go and stay out of my region on a weekend, it's like, well, Saturday morning, Sunday morning, I want to go to a market. And there's so many of them. And the internet is fantastic place, but there's so much information. It's hard, like, unless your algorithms are doing the things they're supposed to do, you can miss everything. And we're really hoping that this will be a space, and we link to other people. So this is a space where they can go, where's the market? Here. They're telling me it's here. I'm going to click on this, and it's going to lead to their page, and they're going to tell me all about the Barossa Farmers Market.
So it's a one-stop shop.
That's the idea.
And, you know, we envisage that, you know, down the track, once we get more content into the website for each region, you know, we can have a QR code in some accommodation places or somewhere where people can go, hey, I can look what I can do this weekend in the Clare Valley. Because, you know, there's some great things, but unless they're looking up Greg Cooley or Napstein Wines specifically on their Facebook, they're not going to find out about it.
Mm. It's fantastic, and you're filling a massive void that is developing in the state, in regional SA. So congratulations, and can't wait to see what happens in the next 12 months for you both.
Thank you. Stay tuned.
That's Melissa Smith and Abby Tiller, co-creators of Greater SA. Hop onto their website, check out their content. And if you have a story that you feel needs to be shared with the rest of the state, get in contact with the girls. GreaterSA.com.au. That's it for another episode of the Clare Valley Podcast. Check out my show notes for further details on any of the stories or topics that Helen McDonald brought up in the latest council meeting update. I've attached the minutes as well. I'm Annabelle Homer. I'll catch you in a few weeks' time for another episode before Christmas is upon us. Gee, where has the year gone? This podcast was brought to you by the Clare and Gilbert Valleys Council.